Okay, tonight's topic is Judaism rational or is it ritual? Or superstitious? I had different titles at different points. Just a little stitious. I've heard that before.
What's that I smell over here, Blesher?
It's your office.
What's that I smell over here?
It smells like sheer.
Whoa.
So, the three issues I want to tackle tonight, there's five pages. Five pages of sources. The three issues that I want to tackle tonight, and probably we'll have to continue tomorrow night, but I wanted to give you an outline, is number one, the issue of kinim, lice. There is a halacha that you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos. Why? Because they don't give birth, they don't procreate, they are spontaneously generated. Seems a little irrational if we know. Are you doing this? Science today has revealed to us that does not seem to be the case. Number two, so I'm not going to go. I know I did a share. We did a share on spontaneous generation earlier, but I don't want to go. I wanted to touch on it, but I did want to focus more. It is important, but I wanted to focus more on issue number two and three. The second thing that I want to focus on is metzitza. Metzitza is when giving a bris milah, circumcision, there is a practice of sucking the blood out of the penis. The third thing I want to discuss is ruach ra or shaitan. We'll see how they are related. What? Shaitan. Shaitan are demons, and Ruach Ra, the evil spirits that we wash our hands to rid the hands and the fingers of the evil spirits, is something that most of us do every day. So these are three issues I wanted to tackle. Is Judaism a superstitious religion? Is it just a little stitious? Ayin Hara. I didn't touch Ayin Hara really, but these are going to be quite enough for us to discuss. And I want to hear from you guys what you think. First of all, what do you guys think? You think Judaism makes sense? Is it rational? Is it a combination? Do we just do things that are crazy? What do you think? What do you think, Phil?
I mean, this is a
big question. It's a question. How could it be rational if we have chukim?
I think it's
okay.
Irrational, but it just it
okay. Well, again, a chok perhaps is it might be. I'm not telling you one way or the other, but it could be that a chok has a deeper meaning, but that either the deeper meaning is eludes us, or the deeper meaning is that sometimes we want to recognize we don't know everything, right? So this rational doesn't necessarily mean that we understand everything. Rational in the sense that I'm saying is the general thrust of the religion. Is it a religion that embraces rationality, or is it a religion that embraces...
It's the same where you're feeling like there are more rational parts than others.
Okay. What do you think, Shai? Can you
put an egg roll on my... Which one do you want?
I don't know. There's different types?
Veggie beef.
Vegetables. Thank you. Thank you so much.
If you mean rational in the sense that you can understand the rules, the laws that make it work the way it's working,
okay.
Then only the stuff that you don't understand the laws. If you understand rational, that somehow if you had infinite intelligence, that you actually understand what's going on when you're banned from eating pig or whatever, then yes, it is at the end of that infinite intelligence rational.
So Shai is saying, does the system make sense in its within its own parameters?
Yeah.
I think certain things can be...
Okay, good.
Like, see whether or not I think certain things seem contradictory in certain cases. But I think most things seem fairly...
All right.
Fairly
okay. So far we have a range of opinions here.
We'd love to say it's rational, but...
We'd love to say it. Okay.
But a lot of times, if you ask a question, you always hear, just believe, just trust, whatever. Does that really mean it's rational?
Okay. You always hear that. I don't always hear that. Many times. Okay.
That's what Judaism is, virtue of a mom telling her kid because I said so, because she knows the kid won't understand what she's saying.
Okay, that's right.
That's just Judaism. Or, okay, fine, so we have a range of opinions. Either some of the time it's rational, some of the time it's not. We have, it sometimes feels like it doesn't make sense, and people tell us to just believe. We have the system maybe makes sense, but there are laws that elude us, and we have some that say that it's a kind of a mixture. Okay. So, I know we did this before, so I'm not going to go too far into it, and Phil's, you know, Chazara is good, but, you know, we're not going to go full into it, but just to mention it, because it's the first issue I want to deal with, Kenim. Lice. So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, says, source number one, it's a discussion about killing animals on Shabbos. There's an Isser prohibition on Shabbos to kill an animal. And the Gemara says, well, what about when it comes to lice? So the Gemara says, Maskel Rav Yosef, Adkan lo pligi rabbanan alei de Rabbi Eliezer, Elabakina, the rabbis only argued with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. They only allowed the killing of kinim on Shabbos. Why? They only allowed the killing of lice on Shabbos. The ain't all part of Rabba. It does not give birth. So, how does it exist? Seemingly, it doesn't procreate. It spontaneously generates. And the issue with this, really, is that Louis Pasteur did a lot of different things. Pasteurized milk. Pasteurization was one of his inventions. He also, working on previous information from scientists before him, he debunked the idea of spontaneous generation in general. And we know that kinim, they have microscopic eggs, but we know that lice lay eggs. And because of this, the Pachad Yitzchak, not Rav Yitzchak Huttner, but a earlier Pachad Yitzchak from Rav Yitzchak Lamporntini, he was someone who seemingly was familiar with at least the beginnings of this study, because he lived in 1679, he was born in 1679, died in 1756. He, in his encyclopedic work, the Pachad Yitzchak, he writes about this, and he prohibited the killing of lice, even though the Torah, the Gemara, said that it is allowed. So the question is, were Chazal, were our sages wrong? Were they just accepting the science of their times? And that's why, let's say, Rav Yitzchak Lamporntini was saying, he was a whistleblower. He was saying, whoa, this is wrong. The rabbis got this one wrong. Or is there a different explanation? Did Chazal perhaps know more than meets the eye? No pun intended. So what do you guys think? I know we spoke about this before, but we've offered different explanations. What do you guys think?
Isn't there an idea kind of that, like, God wanted us involved in the religion,
mm-hmm.
and so we had to interpret it ourselves, and it kind of left room for error, so it could be that there were things that were maybe not totally correct, but he would rather us have, like, this imperfect law than mm-hmm. be totally not involved at all. That would be us, like, involved and, like, make a couple mistakes, then us being totally distant from it.
So Jason's suggesting that part of the definition of Torah Shabbat Peh, or you know, Torah that's involving human input, is the room for error. That's beautiful. I think it's an interesting idea. But we have to know, you know, then is our whole system just, like, made up? And just, like, what's the significance of it if it's just human, you know, human error makes its way into halacha? So then, why should I keep halacha?
Because that was the point.
Because Hashem wants us to keep halacha that's perhaps mistaken.
As long as we're
following the rules. Okay, I think it's a beautiful idea. I think that it might have some, you know, some might sense that there's a maybe less importance in the system then. Did you want to say anything else? Ami? Right, Ami? You want to raise your hand or no? Just
that it's possible that they were wrong, but also we can't, like, contradict them because then the whole system turns into a room.
So he's saying, yeah, Chazal were wrong. Chazal are not scientists, and we're not meant to treat them that way. But if we want to have a system, we can't just question everything they've ever said. But they are rabbis, they are your spiritual guides, but they're not going to be telling us what's going on in the lab. Okay.
Or maybe they are, and they had some crazy insight, and we're wrong.
And we're wrong. And the science
knew what Louis Pasteur knew, then how come they didn't invent pasteurization?
Oh. Could be.
Because they were learning. I don't know.
They didn't have time.
Learning yeah. takes priority over saving hundreds of thousands of people.
They didn't know how far. I don't know. It's a very good question. They obviously didn't know everything that he knew. That seems to be clear. But how much did they not know? Okay. So I want to share with you just a quick idea that I heard, which might actually echo things that we've said in the past. But I heard this from Rabbi Willig recently because we're learning Hilchos Shabbos, so it came up. I wanted to share it with you. So there's a Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel, who lived in the about the 11th century, on that daf in Shabbos, he writes the following. He says, he's discussing the debate in the Gemara. He says that they're debating whether or not the kinim, the lice have beitzim, have the eggs. But then he says, but I don't understand. He says, but we see with our own eyes, Alma yesh beitzim lekinim. But we see that there are beitzim. We see there are, you know, there are eggs. So he says, clearly, we see this is the reality. Now the Rach, Rabbeinu Chananel, preceded Louis Pasteur by like 6 centuries, right? So he said, it's got to be that they have beitzim. It's not spontaneous generation. And if the Rach knew this, Rabbi Willig said it's possible, or it's likely, that Chazal also knew this. So what's this whole discussion in the Gemara? So he wants to claim, and this others say this, and we spoke about this last time, Rav Shlomo Zalman says this, and it's possible this might answer, at least in this particular area, and we're going to see other areas which might not be so simple, but they want to argue like this. Kinim are very small, very, very small, microscopic sometimes. From a halachic perspective, we look at kinim as if they are spontaneously generated. Not that we think that they actually are, but from a halachic perspective, since we can't even see the kinim, right, we had in the Makos, we had the Chartumim said, Etzbelo Kimhi, because they're so small they can't even use their magic on it. They're so small that we treat it as if it's spontaneously generated. Otherwise, and the Aruch HaShulchan says this when it comes to water, he says, anything microscopic, anything not seen by the naked eye, we don't have to worry about. Otherwise, you really couldn't drink a cup of water. You know how much bacteria is in this? You know how many things are going on in this cup of water? Right? We don't consider microscopic bugs to be problematic to consume. We don't consider microbes to be treif. That's just the reality of halacha is that we don't consider microscopic matter to be a problem. Now, there are other opinions. I think I shared this with you last time that Rabbi Bleich, another Rosh Hashiva in this yeshiva, he wrote about this in his, I think, most recent contemporary halachic problems. And he said that actually most disagree with the Bachad Yitzchak. And they say that we have a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. We have a law coming down from Sinai that you may not contradict, that says you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos. And if you deny that and you're strict on that, it's bordering on the heretical. So you actually come out with something interesting. You have, the more strict you are, the more fry, the more non-religious you are in this regard. If you're not going to kill them on Shabbos, the more scientific, rational you are, the more strict you're going to be on Shabbos. But according to Rabbi Bleich, you're going to be bordering on the heretical. And the more lax you are, that you're being lenient, you're actually going to be more frum in this regard. So it's very interesting. There are there's obviously a middle ground here, but those are, like, I would say, the two extremes. That Chazal knew everything, but they got it. They weren't concerned with the microscopic issue. And then Rabbi Bleich on the other hand is saying, no, they exist. Lice cannot procreate. And that's in denying that is possibly heretical. How do we deal with the fact that science says differently? It's possible that we had a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that you're allowed to kill lice, and we don't know the reason. The Chazal were trying to figure out why it was allowed. Yeah.
maybe we can say that like the Torah was given to us to study with the tools that we have. So at those times, we didn't have those tools to analyze nature in such a detail. So it was right for them to apply those halachos because that's what they had. Now that we have more tools, then
right.
we can like apply those tools. To the things. Like if there's a specific tradition, if you can, there's an Alchemy Shemisina, so then you can change. But if it's something that you're just like trying to analyze the Alchemy that we're giving by tradition and applying to a specific situation,
right.
Then those things may be too
beautiful. That, so they quote the Chazon Ish as saying that the Torah was given at a certain time in history, and that. As you said, the tools that those that Chazal had at the time that the halacha was being established was a certain measure of divine providence that was what they were koveya, they established as the halacha. The problem becomes when those rules no longer make sense to us because we now have tools of analyzing it differently. So, for instance, trefos is a big thing. That's where the Chazon Ish talks about it. So, a lot of the rules we have about figuring out if animals are going to live the year or not are just not true anymore. You check an animal's lungs and they have a nick in it, it might be able to live longer, they could live shorter, it's a whole different world that we live in. So why are we still following the rules of trefos that were true, you know, 1,000 years ago? The Chazon Ish says because it was a hashkacha that Hashem, in His divine providence, decided that was how the halakha would be decided. Even though now today we have different rules, different tools. So you're suggesting maybe we should change the rules.
If there's a specific right. tradition... Like
maybe not, right.
If there's something that they interpreted during that time, and there was no, like...
tradition. I hear you. So you're saying if it was just reactive to the... or whatever, they're using the science they had, so then maybe we'd change it. So that would be the Rav Yitzchak Lampertini approach. That the halacha said that it's mutter. They didn't know that it was usher. Hard to say. It's hard to say for a couple of reasons, and maybe we'll end the spontaneous generation part now because we've done it before. But the hardest part in saying this type of thing is you're basically saying, from a traditionalist standpoint, that for thousands of years Jews violated Shabbos.
They didn't, because the Torah was given to the human beings the way they are.
Well, yeah, but objectively speaking,
take Rosh Chodesh. We cover Rosh Chodesh. Even if you're wrong, it's Rosh Chodesh.
Okay. Okay. It's hard to say that again, it's denying the reality. If you hold that Rosh Chodesh, like the Rajba says, the moon changes based on what Chazal say, then I can maybe hear it, but to see that we're just, you know, Hashem just cares about what you know and...
Yeah. Everything again, in the Torah is up for interpretation.
Again, it's not everything's up for interpretation. There's a certain... We don't believe that Judaism is just ritualistic. I gave away my opinion. It's not just symbolic that we're listening to what we think is, you know... We want to try to figure out what general... the reality is and how halakha views that reality. But listen, it's a tough one. Yeah. What about it?
How can you say that those are not ritualistic?
What do you mean?
I mean, the whole idea of Menagim is that it's not a notion of Sinai, it's just something that we accumulated over time.
What I meant by ritualistic, I think there are rituals. I don't mean that there aren't things we do, let's say, because that's how we've done them. But what I mean to say is that it's not just that thousands of years ago they thought that the light spontaneously generated, so therefore, you know, they were supposed to just follow what it says in the, you know, in the Gemara, and they didn't have to know anything better. And now that we know, we have to change it because it doesn't really matter. It matters more what we're doing as opposed to what is happening. That's what I mean. We're gonna get to that.
Is it possible that the Ravim or Chazal was right in their din, but they're wrong in the reason?
Right, so that is kind of what we were saying. Possibly what we are suggesting is that they knew from a tradition that it was problematic, and they were trying to figure out that it was allowed, and they were trying to figure out why. Oh, yeah. It's a good answer. Again, I think either way, different explanations have their strengths and have their weaknesses. I haven't found one. Willig thinks the best answer is that from a microscopic perspective, we never care. So that helps us. We never care halakhically when it comes to how microscopic matter. And that helps us to say that, number one, the general mainstream consensus of the poskim that you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos is still upheld. And number two, it allows us to reconcile Chazal's opinion with modern science. Okay. That's the best answer.
He's opposite that. He's very microscopic. Didn't we have a shiur on that last year?
So Rav Schechter is machmir not to drink water. You're right. Correct. That, but that is that not to drink water without a filter. But that's not because he, again, it's complicated. He doesn't drink water without a filter in New York City because there are copepods in the water. We gave a share on that last year, you're right. But that's not because that he believes in microscopic matter being a problem.
Yeah,
he thinks
what is this? Besides for like
one second, let me finish. So he doesn't believe that microscopic matter is a problem. He thinks that because originally, as a beria, they were able to be seen by the naked eye, and then they broke down later. He says we follow the original sighting of them. What's your question, Zalman? What are copepods? They're water bugs. You could look online. Copepods. They're in your water.
The tiny.
Rabbi Willig says, "Show me the bugs."
What about the ideas?
He's fine with it. Show me the bugs.
Is my Brita filter good enough? I don't care about halakha. I'm just saying I don't want to be drinking these bugs.
Whoa, this is your recording, man. I don't care about halakha.
I'm just kidding recording. But seriously,
I don't have the answer. It's a difficult sugya.
What about?
I like what you guys are saying, and Tommy has some great answers. Jason, very good guys. I don't have all the answers. I'm presenting what people say about this.
On your idea of microscopic things, what about like cautious and?
This is a kosher question. Am I allowed to drink water?
Like things, like mixing. I would argue that maybe plates,
the food particles, yeah, or maybe the taste, the bleos.
Yeah.
Very good. That's a big question. I could have added that to the discussion. It's a big question. Today we treat the Shulchan Aruch talks about when you cook, dairy in a pot, it becomes dairy, and then if you eat milk, if you cook meat in it, it's treif maybe, basar b'chalav, but in stainless steel, you know, you probably wouldn't taste much in your food if you did a taste test. So I could have added that as a fourth topic to analyze. It's a very good point. But let's do for the next 15 minutes, let's do the gory discussion of mitzitza. Okay, you ready for this?
But isn't like even just
we're probably not going to finish. We have 15 minutes. Yeah.
But isn't even just like already saying that like the taste like the that
taste
already.
Of blood?
I'm saying like the like what you're talking about like as far as like you know from where like the halacha originates of like you know milk and meat.
Right.
To go like even saying like the taste like where does Chazal even get or whoever. Whichever halakhic authorities says that taste all of a sudden is a factor. Like where
the Gemara in Chulin, the Gemara does discuss. You know, you don't have that 1 in 60 shishim, famous shishim. So one of the explanations, Tosfos says this, and it's seemingly the mainstream opinion, is that the Gemara assumes that 1 in 60, if it's not so pungent, is the general assumption of what will impart taste.
So, but nowadays,
taste is a factor.
But nowadays, let's say, even if you have like some kind of like you know clay,
he's a big cook, guys. He's a
some kind of like clay pot, which I don't know who's cooking a clay pot. Let's say you have like maybe like a cast iron, you know, skillet.
Right, you're not going to taste much.
And you wouldn't clean a cast iron skillet with like traditional like cleaning methods that you clean any other pot because it would ruin it. But let's say you did, because a cast iron skillet's like the only thing that I would say nowadays that really might retain flavor.
Oh, you think it does?
Purposely keep it
right,
in such a way.
Right.
That it
so then they would, right?
But most things nowadays, like I'm saying, what does it mean taste? They probably meant taste back then. Is that like you used your pot and you know they didn't have soaps.
There was never
really clean. So maybe like bitul mishi. But saying like nowadays, like a microscopic thing compared to like the
I don't
road.
Know about you, but if I don't clean my macaroni and cheese in my pot and I cook like a you know chicken in there, it's gonna taste weird.
Yeah, no, but let's say you use soap and use a sponge and you clean out whatever, even if it's not stainless steel.
So that's the question. Even not stainless steel.
Not stainless steel.
So
I'm
you're
saying,
broadening
like,
the question.
Saying, like particles.
You're right. That's the question. That is a question.
If can I smell cheese while I'm eating a burger?
I'm saying, like, there's little tiny.
What smell? Can I breathe in?
That's not what we're saying.
Why? Then what's the difference? What's the difference between inhaling a strong cheese?
The facts are when you cook something into another food, and there's, you know, with 1 in 60, you will have some sort of remnant of it. Smell, there's no iser to smell non kosher food.
No, I'm saying, like.
It doesn't mix together in your mouth.
Saying when you're smelling something, what's happening is little tiny, like.
I agree with you, but that does no one is forbidding you.
I'm the cook. I don't know about like.
No one's forbidding you of from smelling ice cream while you're eating your burger.
Okay, so a new kosher restaurant experience.
Big Kula, guys. Kula from Rav Lesher Shear. Get to smell ice cream. Okay, guys, let's do a little bit about matzitza, and then we'll have to get you tomorrow. Okay, guys, let's go. You guys know about the matzitza thing? I didn't even know about this. I didn't know about this.
What is this?
It's known in the world as the MBP. Matzitza Biped controversy.
Wait, what is this?
The MBP controversy.
Read it.
Sometimes you suck the blood directly.
Oh.
From the penis. Yeah, you never heard this.
Okay, this is that's going on live. Yes. What I said can't.
Guys, the next time you're at a bris, if you want to watch, you go up and you'll watch the Moel. And in YU, what they do is they have a tube that they put to the penis and they suck from the tube to not have the mouth go right on the penis. In other circles, and in Hasidic circles, they go right onto the actual penis. That's what they do. So it actually comes from. It's not so much blood. There's a Gemara. This comes from a Gemara. It's not just one. It's not just the minhag. It's a Gemara. The Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara says Motitzin in the Mishnah. Omer Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, "Hi Umna Delo Mayitz, a Moel who does not do the sucking of the blood. Sakanahi. It's dangerous. The Arvinan lay and we fire him." Woo! Pshit, the Gemara says, obviously, we violate the Shabbos for this because it is dangerous. It is dangerous. So the Gemara says, you gotta suck the blood out of the penis because if you don't, it's dangerous. What does that mean, it's dangerous?
Dangerous
if you do, says Menachem. Okay. So the Tiferes Yisrael in the Boaz on the Mishnah. In the 19th paragraph, I don't have this on the Marma Comments because I couldn't find it. On Bar Ilan, it only has the Yachin, not the Boaz. He actually says that his doctors tell him that it's dangerous. Just like today, they say it's dangerous. It's a big debate. I've read articles on both sides. Seemingly, according to some, I mean, if the Moa has herpes, then it can be dangerous. In general, it doesn't seem to be dangerous. But I've seen studies marshaled both ways. Rabbi Tendler is very famous in his opinion on this one, that he holds it's mamish dangerous and you should not do it. And if you do it, you should do it with a tube. And we're going to discuss for 10 minutes should one do the matzitza on Shabbos? Seemingly, I'll just get the question, I'll answer your question, Zach. Seemingly, if matzitza is just for medical purposes, and even if theoretically the Gemara at their time they had less medical means, then it was beneficial for them, and it was a sakana, they didn't do it. But today we know, even if you think it's not dangerous, we don't think that if you don't do it, it is dangerous. There are many people who are circumcised in hospitals, not by molim, they don't do this, and they seem okay. So the question is, we seem to know from a matter of a medical standpoint that it is not dangerous. I would say more than seem to know, we know. So does that mean that we should not do it on Shabbos because there's a general isser of chavala? There's a general isser of mefarik, of taking a liquid out of a solid, of doing a chavala, of making a wound on Shabbos. And if it's not part of the actual mila, if it's not part of the actual bris mila, which we know you're allowed to do on Shabbos, then seemingly it would be usur, the araisa, to do it on Shabbos. And Rabbi Tendler himself, I heard this from him himself, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law, he's one of the Rosh Hashiva here, he believes, Rabbi Moshe Tendler, that one should not do matzitza on Shabbos. Yes, Zach. Okay. Rabbi Willig, he said, the question is, that's not the practice. Jewish practice is to do it on Shabbos. So Rabbi Willig typically defends Jewish practice, wants to know why not. Why don't we forbid matzitza on Shabbos. Yes, Zalman.
What if we're taking the approach, I took Jewish engagements, and this is like one of the discussions that discussed like different approaches.
Okay. To this question?
General of
this
science.
This is Rabbi J.J. Schachter?
Just one of the approaches in general of contradicting like science and Torah is that it's not that the science was wrong, yeah, it was with the science they had for the time, but they were just using the science of their time to explain, you know, like spiritual phenomena, right, or whatever. So like it's not that the halacha. So like, uh-huh. I mean, like when we say it's dangerous, like was it actually medically dangerous? Like, I can't imagine that babies were dying if they wouldn't have done this, because it's not like medicine changed. Like, it's just they didn't.
Medicine has definitely gone under a lot of changes.
Medicine changed. I'm saying no.
That in that time,
if I went back in time with modern medicine, again, I'm not a biology major, but I'm pretty sure that the medicine of our time to cure, you know,
if you're a biology major, then you
like
be
if
able to
I
go back
if I went back with penicillin back in time, I'm pretty sure penicillin would still work. They just didn't discover it.
Oh, I hear what you're saying.
I'm saying like it's not. It was never. Physically dangerous.
I don't know if it was ever physically dangerous. The Gemara says it was. I'm assuming that they had a different.
So, but maybe they had less. Like,
you
know, nowadays,
antiseptics,
we have,
they had so many less medical means. I assume that taking the blood out, perhaps, again, I don't know.
But if that were the case, then we would say that we...
Theoretically, if it was dangerous then, I agree with you. Maybe it wasn't dangerous then. But even if it was...
But if that was
it's certainly not today.
If that was the reason why then they would do it, because let's say like because of infection, that's the best they had to.
That's the best they had, right?
You know,
there's obviously.
Then nowadays we wouldn't do it anyway.
We would do it.
The halacha is really it's not that you should do that to, you know, you should.
The halacha is to make
that
sure
you
that you the kid doesn't die.
Exactly. So
right.
we would put Neosporin and we put a band.
I understand.
Also,
that's what
we knew the reason. Isn't the rabbi like a great risk of getting AIDS?
Right.
Almost a certain degree.
You're saying, forget the kid. What about the rabbi?
Yeah, the rabbi's in danger because that.
Okay.
He almost certainly will get AIDS at the baby.
Right, forget
about AIDS. Like,
AIDS kills you. AIDS kills you.
He could be put in jail.
I totally freaked you out on me. I'm sorry.
Can you just do a convert? Like, when they
convert,
you get a
receiver? Every bris.
What about a
convert who has, let's say, in the hospital was circumcised, does not need to have a full new bris. They just take a tiny little bit of blood. They don't do that.
They do the full procedure, though? You know?
No. They don't do it. Okay, so the question, you hear the question?
He doesn't want to become a rabbi anymore.
Okay.
You don't have to be a lawyer.
Look, it's profitable to be a lawyer.
The Chasam Sofer discusses this question. It sounds from the Gemara that it's purely medical, right? Maybe it was to prevent infection. Maybe it was not. Maybe it was. The Gemara says it was dangerous, so I take the Gemara at face value. It doesn't sound like it has any part of the mitzvah. It sounds like it's purely a medical concern, right? So if it's a medical concern, then the argument could be, then there would be no reason to do it today. That would be the rational approach, right? We know today science tells us it's not dangerous not to do it. And therefore on Shabbos, when we are concerned with many of these issues of drawing blood, we would not do it on Shabbos. So the Chasam Sofer deals with this a little bit. He says, quotes a bunch of different people who ask the following question. The Shagas Aryeh, in the name of the Baruch Frankel, asked the following question. We know that Mekalka B'Chabura is Aser. Mekalka B'Chabura is Aser. How do we know that Mekalka B'Chabura is Aser? In other words, making a Chabura on Shabbos. How do we know that making a wound, wounding someone on Shabbos is prohibited on Shabbos? How do we know? Because the Torah says you're allowed to do a Bris Milah. That's what Gemara says on Shabbos. So that means that there's an issue with Bris Milah being done on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara says on Daf Kuv Vav 106a in Shabbos. So the Chasam Sofer, quoting these great rabbis, he says like this, or the Shagas Aryeh, I don't understand. How do we see from that it's allowed? Why don't we do the bris right before Shabbos and then delay the mitzitza, delay the drawing of that blood until after Shabbos? Why don't we do that? And how does the Gemara know that you're allowed to do Shabbos, you're allowed to do Milah on Shabbos? Maybe we should do it right before Shabbos and then do the mitzitza, the drawing of the blood later. Right? He says, Dilma b'mila gufa, tahavi kilko lo tzuchakala hatir, tikun mitzvah, lav tikunu. Maybe the Puzzle didn't need to come and tell me I'm on the third paragraph in source number 5. Maybe the Puzzle didn't need to come and tell me that you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos because when you do a kilkel, when you do a destructive act on Shabbos, it's allowed. And the only reason we needed a puzzle was Ela Mishum Mitzitza. The only reason we needed a special puzzle to allow it was because of the Mitzitza. Was the drawing of that blood, the sucking of that blood. And that, he says, is going to be a tikkun. It's going to be a positive act because it is for tikkuni gavril hatzil misakonis nefashos. It's to save him from any, from death. We're not going to have enough time to finish. So we'll have to just pick up from this tomorrow night. Do we do Matisse today on Shabbos? Why do we do it? It seems to be only for medical purposes. The Chasam Sofer sounds like that. Sounds like that over here at this stage. We'll have to see more next time. So put your pass your papers back up. We're going to reuse them for tomorrow night. And we're also going to discuss the issue of Ruach Ra, washing Netilas Yadayim. Is that just superstitious? What is it? And why do we do it? Shkoyach, guys.
Sorry, I was late.
You know, I
went to a Moshe Shulamberg's thing at 8:30, and usually these things only go for half an hour. He does these.
Beautiful. Was
but
it good?
He came at like 8:45.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Sorry.
No problem.
Was it good? Then once it started, he started talking about actually being there.